Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The president yesterday accepted the resignation of General Stanley McChrystal as commander in Afghanistan and nominated General David Petraeus to replace him. General McChrystal was sacked for insulting his civilian leadership in an article published in the latest Rolling Stone magazine. Joining us today to talk about the upset is Colonel retired Peter Mansour, who is now a military history professor at OSU. He's been very, very busy over the last 24 hours talking with the media from around the world. And he served as executive officer to General David Petraeus when he was commander of multinational forces in Iraq. So that was in 2007, 2008, during the surge there. So we welcome you, Colonel Mansour, to the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
So why in the world would someone like General McChrystal talk like that, not surprisingly in and of itself, but in front of a reporter from Rolling Stone with his tape recorder running?
Well, I tell you, after reading the story, and I have read the Rolling Stone story, I got an advanced copy, my first thought was, what were they thinking? It's pretty clear that General McChrystal didn't understand his role as a theater commander. As part of the political military interface, and that engagements with the media, engagements with foreign officials are all part of the job. And, you know, he failed to set the right tone for the people around him. And so when he started yucking it up with his inner circle about Vice President Biden, and making a few jokes, they took his cue, their cue from him, and then they gave it back to him in even worse form. And you know, he was incredibly ill served by the people around him in this case, because someone should have realized, hey, we forgot we have this Rolling Stone reporter in the room. This might not be the best topic of conversation, even if they were thinking it. So you know, I think the people around him failed him. They clearly didn't understand the position they were in, and they certainly didn't understand some of the basic rules of dealing with the media, and that came out in spades in what happened.
But, you know, a lot of folks have kind of looked at General McChrystal and General Petraeus, for that matter, as kind of personifying the new military, the idea that America's commanders need to sell their strategies as much as execute them, and that's why, you know, he threw open his headquarters in the first place, is to the press and the public, in a way that really even 20 years ago might have been unimaginable. So had he not thought through the process of, you know, the consequences? Is it that simple?
It's not exactly simple. You need to try to engage the American people and the world public on the strategy and why you think it'll succeed. That's really an important part of the job. But what he did is he gave access to an anti-war reporter, because if you read the story, Michael Hastings clearly anti-war. It comes out in spades in the article. And that would have been okay if he had just given him an interview, because you don't want to shut off communication to those folks. But to allow him a number of days of unfettered access to his inner circle to do a personality piece. This is the same sort of thing that got Admiral Fallon fired when he gave access to a reporter from Esquire, who then reported that he was at odds with the administration on their Iran policy. This would be the Bush administration. So you have to realize who these people are. A good public affairs officer will be able to tell the commander, okay, this person has this sort of slant. This is what he's after in terms of his story. And then you can shape the media engagement around that, whether it's going to be an hour interview or whether you're going to give him a longer period of access. If you look at – go back to General Petraeus, and everyone says how media savvy he is, and he is. But you realize that he did not give access to reporters for any length of time to do a personality piece on him during his tenure in Iraq. They did it at the very, very tail end of his tour there for exactly this reason.
In other words, the reporting focused on the strategies, the execution of the strategies, not the personalities behind them.
That's exactly right. And we did give some access to some longer-term projects, people who were writing books, Linda Robinson, Tom Ricks. But that was with the stipulation that everything was off the record until the publication date of the book. and that the and that we had some control over the publication dates. In the case of Tom Ricks, we said he couldn't publish it before the end of the presidential election, so that it wouldn't become part of the news cycle leading up to the presidential election.
If you're just joining us, my guest is retired Colonel Peter Mansour. Now he's a military history professor at OSU, but in 2007-2008, during the surge in Iraq, he served as executive officer to General David Petraeus when he was commander of the multinational forces there. And General Petraeus yesterday was nominated to replace Stanley McChrystal as commander in Afghanistan. There's a stricture. It's called Article 88 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It basically governs military conduct and dictates that, quote, any commissioned officer who uses contemptuous words against the president, the vice president, Congress, the secretary of defense, etc., shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. Now, where does this fit into that matrix of Article 88?
If you look at the quotes in the article, most of them, the vast majority, come from General McChrystal's staff. All of whom are unnamed in the story. And this, again, is where General McChrystal was incredibly ill-served by these people. But then again, he picked them. You know, he filled his inner sanctum with people who were probably good operators, good warriors, good soldiers, and who had very little clue about the weight of their responsibilities at the theater level and the interface, the necessary interface between General McChrystal and the public and General McChrystal and various government officials. You know, they're carping about a dinner with a minister in France. Well, that's part of his job. You know, he should have been very cognizant of the fact that this is part of his job. And if he wasn't, then it should have been his executive officer or someone like that who said, you know, I think this is really important. This is a NATO ally. We're trying to keep them on the team. And that's why you're going to this dinner. So, you know, these folks, they're, you know, the worst comments came from the staff. If you look at what General McChrystal said, he made one sort of offhand joke about, well, what do I say if they ask me about Vice President Biden, right? Because he had been in the news as having been at odds with Joe Biden over the various strategies.
And this is about when he was going to talk about the strategy.
Yes. Yeah. And so he kind of thought about how he would answer the question. He basically said, well, maybe I should answer it by saying, are you talking about Vice President Joe Biden? Who's he? You know, sort of a ha ha ha. Well, you know, I don't think that's necessarily contemptuous. It's maybe poor humor. It may be a little rude. But I don't think it falls under the court-martial offense. Now, but then if you look at what some of the people on his staff said, then they're really get very close to that line. And it was a line they had no business being near.
Is this something that the military would investigate and pursue? The identities of those folks?
I hope not. I think the appropriate action has been taken by the President of the United States. It resulted in the relief of General McChrystal and the end of his career. And, I think it would do us no good at this point to drag everyone else through the mud. If the Army wants to take a look at these folks and admonish them with letters of reprimand or something, fine. But they should do it out of the public eye.
Do you think this is going to have a chilling effect on the relationship between the military and the media?
It should not. Now, what the military should take from this is not that they shouldn't engage the media, but that they should be smart in how they engage the media. There's no problem having an interview with a Rolling Stone reporter. You understand his slant. You know, you're guarded in what you say. You make sure you're minding your P's and Q's, and you should give those people access. But the problem here is that they gave him access for an extended period of time in a very informal setting. They took him to an Irish pub in Paris, where the staff proceeded to get drunk and then became even more loose in their comments. Again, the executive officer, someone around General McChrystal should have said, General, this is not a good idea to have this reporter along when we're trying to do some team building here. Or I think what would have been better is if the executive officer had said, General, I can see why we should do some team building, but let's do it in the hotel room. You know, why do we need to go to a public venue where, Parisians are going to be there, that someone's going to recognize you, And this is not a good idea.
Well, from a journalist point of view, I would say atmosphere. It would be a lot more interesting to observe someone like General McChrystal or General Petraeus or whoever, anybody like that, and they're the people that surround them in a different kind of atmosphere.
But the purpose of going to the pub wasn't to give the reporter a story. The purpose was team building and team bonding. General McChrystal's wife had flown over to Europe. He was meeting with her. He brought the whole team along. Then they proceeded to have dinner and drinks, and apparently lots of drinks, and it went downhill from there.
The affair reflects poorly, you know, on General McChrystal, would it have undercutted his ability to remain in command? It undercutted his relationship with the civilian leadership. But what about the folks he was commanding?
I don't think it would have affected the troops on the ground in Afghanistan, but it fatally flawed his relationship with the president and the president's national security team. And for that reason, if for no other reason, the president had no choice but to fire him.
So he did it reaffirm then that the power of the civilian control of the military was that something that if they hadn't have fired him, it might come into question? Well, how much control do you really have?
It certainly reaffirmed President Obama's very quick and resolute action. Certainly reaffirmed civilian control of the military enshrined in the Constitution. I think it was the right thing to do. Had he not done it, I don't think civilian control would have been jeopardized, but there certainly would have been a lot of pundits saying it was. And again, that's a debate that you don't need to have while you're trying to run a war effort. Now, it's actually a pretty healthy debate, I think, for us to pursue in academia. It might be wise for the president to establish some sort of presidential commission on civil-military relations. That might be an interesting idea, but it should be something that's done in a longer period of time and not in the crisis of the moment.
Of course, history is replete with examples of military conflict with a civilian. Some have compared this episode with the conflict between General Douglas MacArthur and President Harry Truman during the Korean War in 1951. MacArthur criticized Truman's strategy in Korea and accused the president of tying the military's hands and those kinds of things. Is this comparable to you?
I don't think so. This was not a issue of policy in terms of what was said and the damning statements. It was an issue of disparaging the civilian leadership of the country. I think everyone was on board with the strategy. The president came out yesterday and said that he had no policy disagreements with General McChrystal. Unlike 1951, when General MacArthur advocated the bombing of Red China, he wanted to use nuclear weapons to attack Chinese bases on the Chinese side of the border. He said so. He said as much in a letter to a Republican congressman, I think Joe Martin. And so it was a very different kind of thing. General George C. Marshall looked over the evidence that President Truman gave him for General MacArthur's relief, and Truman's Marshall's response was, "I think you should have done this months ago." But in this case, there wasn't really any disagreement over the policy. There was a lot of personality conflicts, which the president is still going to have to sort through. This is not over by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of strong personalities at play here, and it is up to the president to get them all working together as a team. Appointing General Petraeus is just the first step.
We are talking with U.S. Army Colonel retired Peter Mansour. He was the executive officer to General David Petraeus when he was commander of the multinational forces in Iraq in 2007-2008 during the surge. When we return, we will talk about General Petraeus and what's ahead, the job ahead. On All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Good morning. It's 20 minutes past 11 here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Some sunshine with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms today, a high of 85. Currently, it's 77 degrees and overcast in Columbus. Clear skies with a low around 62 tonight. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high of 85. And Saturday, sunny with a high of 88. What most of us never knew about the dangers of deep water oil exploration. That's coming up on Fresh Air today. New York Times science writer Henry Fountain explains the risks and challenges of dropping a drill bit through a mile of seawater, then grinding through 2 miles of rock to reach oil and gas deposits held at dangerous temperatures and pressures. That's Fresh Air coming up today at noon in just about 40 minutes here on WOSU 820. You can get more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Podcast new and archived news stories from WOSU and NPR. Listen to a story again or share it with a friend and catch up on the news that you missed. Podcast news anytime online at WOSU.org. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on WOSU.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is retired U.S. Army Colonel Peter Mansour. He's also a OSU military history professor. He was the executive officer to General David Petraeus when he was commander of the multinational forces in Iraq in 2007. 2008, General Petraeus has been nominated, as of yesterday, to replace General Stanley McChrystal as commander in Afghanistan. Is this, Colonel Mansour, is this going to change his status in the military? He's now head of the he oversees
International Security and Assistance Force is what he will be the commander of. He's coming out of the as commander of Central Command. It's very interesting.
Is it a demotion?
Yeah. You could actually look at it as such because as commander of Central Command, the commander of ISAF, the International Security and Assistance Force in Afghanistan, reported to him. Presumably, there will be a new commander of Central Command who General Petraeus will report to in due course. But I think it's clear that the president asked him to fill this position in Afghanistan in a critical time of need. General Petraeus saluted, as a good soldier would, and agreed to do it. And I don't think the next commander of Central Command will be under any illusions as to who's in control in Afghanistan and as to how the chain of command works. It will formally run through Central Command to the Secretary of Defense, but it will more likely informally run straight from Kabul to Washington without going through the Tampa loop other than some very substantial coordination. General Petraeus, the reason he was chosen is there would be continuity of effort in Afghanistan. He's familiar with the strategy. He endorsed General McChrystal's strategy. He was probably involved in the formulation of it. It was the only way that you could get someone in there real quickly without appointing someone who would then have to get on the ground and do yet another assessment of what was going on and offer yet more recommendations.
Or come up with a different idea.
Right. I think General Mattis, who's a Marine Corps general, who we had here at Ohio State last month at the Hybrid Warfare Conference, Jim Mattis would have been a really interesting choice to fill the position in Afghanistan had it not been General Petraeus. I think he's still an interesting choice to go to Central Command. He's a Marine general, very well read, very smart guy, and a real warfighter as well. So hopefully the president is looking at him as a possibility. But yeah, it's I don't remember too many times in military history where you have someone who goes from a higher level position to a lower level position at the request of the president. The one time I do remember it was General Andrew Goodpaster was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, and he was in fact retired as a four-star general. And in the wake of the West Point cheating scandal, he was asked to come off of active duty, take a demotion to 3 stars, and assume the leadership as superintendent of the United States Military Academy.
Is there some kind of rule that a 4-star can't do the same thing? I don't.
No, there's no rules at all. it's up to the discretion of the president,
okay,
with the advice and consent of the Senate. And General Petraeus will go through confirmation hearings probably next Tuesday.
And they say I can't remember if it was a Republican though that'll be one of the fastest confirmation hearings in U.S. history.
Well, yeah, it'll be pretty quick. Everyone knows they've heard him many times. They understand that we need to get on with the war, and my guess is it'll be done in a morning, and the vote will be as quick as they can have it thereafter in the full Senate. I think more interestingly, is, if you want to do some real speculation, is what happens next summer when Admiral Mullen's term as chairman of the Joint Chiefs comes up. Does President Obama reward General Petraeus by putting him into that position? I've even heard some speculation that maybe he'd be a good Secretary of Defense to follow Secretary Gates. So, you know, all the speculation in that regard continues.
How much is depend on the success of the strategy in Afghanistan? We have an email from a listener. Do you really think McChrystal was that stupid, or could it be that he knew he was on his way out and wanted to go with the flash? In other words, let's talk about the strategy itself, the counterinsurgency strategy, and how it's working. And is it not working, and that's part of the problem?
I don't think that's the reason he did it. There was some speculation on the web that this was the equivalent of suicide by cop. Exactly as the listener said, go out with a big splash. But I don't think so. Having read the article, it appeared to me that this was just a team that didn't know what they were doing in terms of handling the media. In terms of the strategy, it clearly is working a lot more slowly than anyone had thought it would, and at least anyone involved in its formulation. General Petraeus testified recently, said, give it time. Yeah. You know, we were sort of spoiled by Iraq. We didn't expect the surge to succeed as quickly as it did in Iraq. And within 18 months, it had brought the violence levels down to among the lowest levels in the war and down to levels that were commensurate with political progress, which we've seen recently. It's going to work. If it's going to work in Afghanistan, it's going to work much more slowly. The country is vastly different from Iraq. For one thing, it doesn't have a central location of national politics. Like Baghdad is absolutely crucial to the politics of Iraq in a way that Kabul is not to Afghanistan. So you've got a very dispersed polity. You've got a people, the Pashtuns in the southeastern portion of the country, who are very unsure. They don't like the Taliban, but they certainly don't like the government either. And so they are really in a quandary as to where to go. And right now they're just sitting tight. They're not really supporting anyone. And so we're looking at all this. General McChrystal obviously was annoyed at what he perceived to be a lack of support from Ambassador Eikenberry, whose cable was leaked earlier in the year, saying that Karzai would not be a good partner, and he disagreed with putting more troops into Afghanistan. There were divisions within the White House with Vice President Biden favoring a counterterrorism strategy. And so General McChrystal is clearly a little bit frustrated with all of these things going on, probably felt he wasn't getting as much support as he needed. He didn't have a lot of conferences with President Obama the way that General Petraeus had weekly conferences with President Bush in 2007-2008. I think it just boiled over.
Some have fretted that General McChrystal was the only person positioned to manage President Karzai. And, you know, obviously President Karzai and his brother or his half-brother came out, did a full court press to save General McChrystal from a firing. So is he the president's going to say no? General Petraeus can do just as good of it. He nominated him for the slot. But what do you think about changing horses that high up the food chain?
I think it could be fine. General Petraeus didn't know Prime Minister Maliki before going in as commander of MNFI in Iraq in 2007. And, had a relationship that had its ups and downs, at points contentious and at points very cordial. And in the end, they were able to establish the kind of working relationship that made a difference. And it wasn't just General Petraeus and Prime Minister Maliki, but it was Ambassador Crocker, General Petraeus, and Prime Minister Maliki. And in this regard, General Petraeus will try to form the same kind of good working relations with Ambassador Eikenberry that he did with Ambassador Crocker. And if that fails to come to fruition, then I think the president needs to replace the ambassador, U.S. ambassador in Afghanistan, because you cannot have a team that's divided and expect to succeed in counterinsurgency warfare. It is a civil military operation.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And, of course, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page is there as well. We have an email from Ann with an E. What do we know about General Petraeus' health? He had a fainting spell recently. Was any assessment of his health done after this episode?
Well, we can go back a little bit further to last year. He had a bout with prostate cancer, and he had chemotherapy, which apparently totally eradicated it, and he is fully recovered from that, although they continue to screen him, obviously. The fainting, earlier in, I think earlier this month, he had a hearing before the Senate and Armed Services Committee, and he fainted in the middle of it. What happened there is he was... he had just had a long flight back from the region. He was suffering from a bug that he had contracted over there. And then he hadn't had breakfast that morning because of the stomach bug. And as well, he was dehydrated because little known fact about these congressional hearings, but they could go on for hours and they don't give the people sitting at the table a bathroom break. And
really,
that's exactly right. My first hearing was back. I'm going to tell you a little war story. My first hearing was back in like 98, and I didn't know anything about these hearings. And I was like the assistant to the director for strategic plans and policy. So I wanted to make sure I was really alert during this hearing. And I drank a huge mug of coffee before the hearing. I get in there and I didn't realize they didn't give bathroom breaks. And about 3 hours into it, I'm just dying.
3 hours.
Oh, yeah. And it was like a 4 hour hearing.
And there's no protocol for this. There's no way to wink, wink, nothing. That's interesting.
No.
I'm ever called.
So you basically dehydrate yourself so you don't run into that situation. And that coupled with his long flight, which dehydrated him already, and his stomach bug, he hit the wall and he fainted. But I don't think it had anything to do with longer-term health issues or the fact that, you know, he's exhausted or whatever. I'm sure he could use a nice vacation, but that's going to have to be put on hold.
614-292-8513. Hal, welcome to the show. You're on the air with Colonel Mansoor.
Hi, good morning. Appreciate the show. Have a concern and a question about the division in the politics in the country following the change of administrations. Obviously, there's been a lot of polarity, and I'm wondering that the military is not supposed to be engaged in any sort of political activity, not supposed to reflect any sort of partisan views, but it's hard to not imagine that doesn't occur within the top echelons of the military because of the decision-making process with contracts, with contractors, with all kinds of things that they have to deal with, and politicians are a part of that. So I'm wondering what role politics may have played in the decisions and the criticism and the kind of candor that these folks were expressing, because it seemed to be out of character. Given that if you're on a team, you just simply don't do that. And this seemed to be almost partisan in nature. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know the political leanings of General McChrystal or his staff. I will say that it doesn't depend on the administration in charge. There were the same kind of snarky comments about Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld.
It's whoever your boss is.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's people carping about their boss. But, you keep those things to yourself when you're in a senior level position. You don't let them spill out. I have never heard General Petraeus disparage anyone around him, anyone he works for. You know, as contentious as his relations with Admiral Fallon were, he was always very proper in terms of addressing him, in terms of talking about him, and he never let that spill out into the public. This is where I think it would be good for the military to have some real education among the officer corps at all levels of the professional military education system and really discuss what does professional conduct mean, because it means more than just sort of adhering to the chain of command. It means ensuring that you set the right tone in your relations with your subordinates, in your discussions of your superiors, and that you don't, you know, sort of yuck it up about the politicians and their foibles. And you know, it's just not your place.
Hal, thanks for your call.
Sure.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Richard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. One of the things that I noted in that article, and I did read the article yesterday, and I recall when McChrystal was first appointed, there was some concern about him coming from special operations. And his attitude, his mindset, comes from that kind of operation in terms of, he obviously is a very good soldier, but reading that article, it kind of brought me back historically to the reason why, for example, Eisenhower was the choice in 1943-44 and not Patton. You know, because the role, as Colonel Mansour pointed out, the role of his function really was, is not just military; it's political, it's diplomatic, and clearly, you know, he was not suited for that role. And those comments, I had a conversation yesterday with someone on the other side. Well, it was the wrong thing to do; that he didn't say anything that bad. The point was, he really showed an incredible lack of judgment for an officer at that level, to as the colonel pointed out, to discuss things like that in the presence of that reporter. But even to foster those kinds of attitudes, you know, at that level with the people around him. And I think, clearly he's a great soldier, but he was not suited for the role. And from what I know of General Petraeus, he appears to be, he understands the full range of his responsibilities. So I think there was no choice but for the president to do what he did, and it's unfortunate in General McChrystal's career, but you know, clearly he showed a terrible lack of judgment. I mean, and he could not play as part of that team. You've got former Army General Elkinberry, who's the ambassador, and then Richard Holbrooke. And
could I break in here?
Sure.
For a second? You make a good point about Patton, because General Marshall, after the slapping incident in Sicily, decided that, yes, he would return Patton to a field command someday, where he took over Third Army in Normandy. But he also decided that Patton would never become an Army group commander, because he knew at that level he would have to deal with the politics of the situation, not just the strict military aspects. And this is, I think you're right, it's a good example of a person who was an excellent warrior, a great special operations operator, surrounded himself with like-minded people, but he was not ready for the sort of political nature of a theater-level command. I think it came through pretty clearly in the article, not just about his comments about the vice president, but I think what's as damning in terms of his role, and something most people haven't picked up on, is the fact that he was questioning why he had to go to dinner with the minister of a major NATO ally. I think that should have been pretty apparent to him. So, you know, I would agree with you in that regard. He was just above the level at which he – unfortunately, you know, he's such a good special operations guy. I would love to say, okay, put 3 stars back on and go back to your prior role, because you were really good at doing that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
We have to take a short break in our discussion with U.S. Army Colonel retired Peter Mansour. He is an OSU military history professor. Lucky us. When we return, we'll take your call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Terry Gross, and I have about 15 seconds to explain why you should listen to Fresh Air. You should listen because, unlike this little promo, on Fresh Air we have time. Time to spend with incredibly interesting people in the arts, entertainment, and politics. Enough time that we get to know them. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Some sunshine with a slight chance of showers tapering off this afternoon, a high around 85. Currently, it's 77 degrees and overcast. Tonight, clear skies with a low of 62. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high around 85. And that nice summer weather will continue into Saturday, sunny with a high around 90. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up with current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up, go to WOSU.org/email. It's 40 minutes past 11 o'clock here on WOSU, and more of All Sides with Ann Fisher is coming up right now.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is U.S. Army Colonel retired Peter Mansour. He's an OSU military history professor. He also served as executive officer to General David Petraeus when he was commander of the multinational forces in Iraq, 2007 and 2008, during the surge. The president yesterday accepted the resignation of General Stanley McChrystal as commander in Afghanistan and nominated General David Petraeus to replace him. Those hearings are going to take place next week, but in the meantime, we're chatting about it. We have a call now. We're going to hold off on that right now. Could there have been a worse time, or is there no good time for something like this? Some folks are saying that there couldn't be a worse time because of the operations in Kandahar and that sort of thing. It's a timing issue.
There's certainly no good time for this sort of thing to happen. You never really want your senior level commander in a war to have to be replaced. But looking back in our own history, it's happened. Lincoln went through a number of commanders before he found one who he could settle on, Ulysses Grant. I think this is not unusual, and the military will deal with it, and we'll move forward pretty rapidly, especially given that General Petraeus is the replacement.
Does it send some kind of signal of disarray to U.S. allies and, I guess, adversaries alike? I mean, the Al-Qaeda's got to love it.
The Taliban definitely loves it. They've already come out and have started playing the tune that the enemy's in disarray, and if we just hold fast, we can win this war. This is the kind of psychology that is really, really damaging, because until we change that mindset among the Taliban and make them believe that they're going to lose this conflict, they will not come to the negotiating table. And so I think General Petraeus has a very difficult summer of combat in front of him and his troops, and they have got to take it to the enemy. Otherwise, this situation will not turn around. You know, when we first got to Iraq in 2007, General Petraeus said that we have to force the downward spiral. We have to arrest the downward spiral in the situation and then reverse it and get the situation spiraling upward. And what he was referring to was the initiative. Who has the initiative? And right now, it's pretty unclear. The Taliban did. The injection of U.S. forces is probably made things more even. But now going forward, who's going to have the initiative? And it needs to be ISAF and the American forces and the Afghans and the Afghan government. Otherwise, you know, we'll be right where we are again a year from now with you and I talking about yet another issue in the Afghan war.
We have an email from Paul. The old saying, loose lips sink ships, seems to apply here. A unified face to the enemy is an important part of winning the political and propaganda war. With that in mind, what effect do you think this public display of disunity and political embarrassment will have on the enemy's ability to recruit and hearten their personnel?
Yeah, I think it's, like I just said, yeah. I think it's going to embolden the enemy. And I think the president, because of his quick action and the person he appointed to take over, has somewhat resolved the situation. But the enemy certainly will use this to their purposes. I think it's really important going forward that the president create a unified team among the folks he has around him and the people overseas, Ambassador Eikenberry, Ambassador Holbrooke. And if they can't, then he needs to fire some more people and bring in some people who can work together.
Since you're a history professor, let's go into some history. Joe, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, and thanks for waiting.
Thank you, ma'am. And thank you, Colonel Massoud, for your service to the country. And I'm going to ask you to thank General McChrystal for his service to the country, and I'm sure I'm speaking for a lot of people. I have some comments I'd like to make, and I'd like to ask you to bear with me and then answer them. First of all, I'm wondering why it's such a big deal that General McChrystal has been fired. I mean, the guy McKiernan was fired a year ago, and it was no big deal. I'm also wondering why there's no leaders promoted from within in the armed forces to, you know, people that are experienced in the field that have been in Afghanistan. We don't see any new leaders. And it seems like only General Petraeus has enough cachet to take on this operation. And then I'm wondering...
Well, now hang on there.
Okay. Well, okay. I had a couple other comments, and I hope Peter could answer them.
Well, let's start out with what's the big deal.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, the difference is, and I'm not exactly supportive of the firing of General McKiernan, but at the time, the president felt that a new strategy required a new face. It was almost similar to the way that General Casey was moved out of command of MNFI when the surge was announced and a new commander brought in to implement it. So I can't disagree with the decision. General McKiernan was a good American, and we should thank him for his service as well. But it was the president's decision to begin a new strategy with a new leader, and that's his prerogative. As to and so what's the big deal? Well, in this case, we weren't changing the strategy. There was, again, no policy disagreements between General McChrystal and the president. It was simply a matter of disparaging remarks by him and his staff and a lack of judgment that I think wounded him in such a manner that he would not have been able to work effectively in that position anymore. I don't think the troops would have cared. They realize what a good leader, what a good military leader General McChrystal is. He's very well liked by the troops, but in terms of his ability to operate at the political level and at the level of a political military interface, he was irreparably wounded. And in that regard, the president, I think, did the right thing. Now, new leaders are emerging all the time. What you're, I think, referring to is new leaders at the four-star level. And, that's something that you don't grow very many of these four stars. There's only 13, I think, or so in the Army as a whole. A lot of them you don't hear about. General Petraeus, as of only 3 years ago, was only a three-star. So, you know how long do we have to keep these four stars around before you say bring up some new blood? He's only been a four-star for 3 years. There are other people who are really good. General Mattis, I've mentioned before, I think would be an excellent choice to take over Central Command. New leaders are emerging all the time. And I think the really key one at the four-star level is to find those that have the right skills to operate at the political level and understand the political nature of their position, as well as being a good warrior and a good soldier. And that's a pretty rare combination. I think we've seen more people sort of muddle through or even fail at that level than succeed, as General Petraeus has, or as General Eisenhower did back in World War II.
Let's talk about politics for a little bit. There might be concern or might there be concern among military strategists who favor the counterinsurgency strategy as it was? It was debated, heavily, hotly debated at the time. Could this give anti-war factions in general a foot in the door to reopen the debate about the war in a larger sense and cast a lot of more serious light on it at this point?
I don't think the debate is ever closed, really.
Mm-hmm.
Promulgation of a new strategy, the speech at West Point, never really closed off debate. More Americans disapprove of the war in Afghanistan than approve of it. So I think this has maybe brought more attention to the issue, to an issue that was already open and in the public sphere. And yes, I think it's healthy to have good debates, open debates about these sorts of things. But we saw the same thing in Iraq, that folks were saying the surge has failed and the war is lost. Senator Harry Reid, the majority leader, said that about the surge. He said that in April of 2007, only 3 months into the surge. We didn't even have all the surge forces on the ground. Again, we're hearing that same sort of thing.
And we're not much farther along at this point than
exactly.
In Afghanistan.
All the surge forces will finally be on the ground in September. And here it is June, and we're already saying the thing's lost. So, I believe we owe it to the troops and to the commanders over there to give them the time to implement their strategy. And when July of 2011 comes around, as the president has stated, we'll reassess and we'll decide what to do at that point.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu. You can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well if you want to post a comment or question there. Richard, you're on the air with Colonel Mansour. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you for your service, Colonel.
No, thank you.
I appreciate the comments you just made. I was one of this, had a couple questions along that line. How do you think it's going to be for General Petraeus to work with, Biden, who basically said after the surge had succeeded that it was a failure, and that with Harry Reid, who said it was a failure, Clinton said she would have to suspend disbelief, and MoveOn.org said that, called him General Betray Us. How do you think it's going to be for him to work with people who have little regard, I think, for the military?
Well, fortunately, General Petraeus doesn't have to work with MoveOn.org, so that's the good news. He has, he's mended fences with Hillary Clinton. They have a very good working relationship.
Because they're in charge now?
Part of that is they're in charge now, and they're responsible for the consequences of the war, and so they have that obviously brings a little bit new perspective to what they're talking about.
But she's gained a lot of respect. Well, she's pretty highly regarded.
She's performed fairly.
Hang on.
Did that make her comments before political then? Because
of course they were political. She was running for president. And so was Barack Obama. Senator Obama was running for president. I remember in the hearing of September 2007, that each senator gets 7 minutes to ask questions. He talked for 7 minutes and asked no questions, and then and that was it. He gave us questions for the record.
Richard, let him finish talking.
So. The issue is of course, the presidential campaign was political. And now that they're in office, General Petraeus has found a way to work with his new bosses. And I think he's developing a pretty good relationship with the president. He's developed a great relationship with Senator Clinton, who, by the way, is his senator from the state of New York. He is a resident of Cornwall, New York. He can work with Vice President Biden, who's technically not in the chain of command, but I'm sure he's part of the National Security Council, so he works with him as well. So I don't think General Petraeus will have a problem working with the people that the administration puts around him. I think the more important issue here is he's got the team in Kabul, and the team in the region has to be speak with one voice, and they have to be moving forward together. And right now, if Ambassador Holbrooke and Ambassador Eikenberry can't join that team, then they need to be replaced.
614-292-8513. We have just a couple minutes left. Scott, you have a question about Colonel Mansour.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to say thanks to both of you and Colonel Mansour. Really appreciate this level and depth of experience given the today's subject. Not too many times you get somebody that's perform service and seen and experienced at that level to really be able to give an insight. So it's really particularly important given the subject matter of the news the last 48 hours or so. Sir, to ask you a pointed question, I was kind of curious what General Petraeus's command climate's like in previous commands and your experience with him as MNFI, what it would be like to serve under him. I know that's a pointed question, and I apologize to put you on the spot.
No problem. I would have done it if you hadn't. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
I think the troops are going to welcome General Petraeus being their commander. A lot of them have already served under him in Iraq. He listens. He's very good. He's very open in terms of his communication. He doesn't hide what he's doing. He sends letters to the troops. He visits them routinely. I think two or three times a week in Iraq, he would go out and visit battalions and brigades. He knew every brigade commander by name and most of the battalion commanders as well. He always surrounds himself with good senior non-commissioned officers who take care of the soldiers' needs, and he's very attuned to them. And he's a proven warfighter. I mean, the best thing in the end that you can do for the soldiers as a commander is to be sparing of their lives and to accomplish your mission and to win. And I think when all is said and done, the troops will appreciate that they have a commander who's in it to win.
Colonel Mansour, we have an email from Tom. He wants to know whether you've been in contact with General Petraeus, and if asked, would you resume your duties as executive officer to the general?
I have been in contact with him. Actually, I never was out of contact with him since my retirement.
In the specific theater.
I have written him three times in the last 2 days and gotten a response every time, to include some discussion of various issues. But, if he wanted me back on the team, I would certainly, have to talk to my family, but I'd consider it, an honor to serve with him again. But he's surrounded himself with great people. He attracts talented people the way honey attracts bees. And my guess is he's got everyone around him that he needs. He'll take his team from Tampa with him to Afghanistan. I'm sure he'll make a clean sweep of General McChrystal's personal staff and start over with the folks that he's chosen. And it'll be a great group of people. And, I'll support him in any way I can from whatever position I'm in, which I suspect will be here at The Ohio State University.
We have a final email from Paul. He says, it seems that this was amplification and political commentary interpreting backroom griping, which we've talked about already. What responsibilities do the media have with respect to reporting and analyzing this affair?
When I was just with General Petraeus, we demanded three things of the media. The first was clarity. They had to get the facts right. The second thing was context. They had to wrap whatever the story was in the correct context. And then finally was characterization, that they had to characterize their comments such that it painted the picture that was appropriate to the story they were telling. You can't take a picture of one person crying in a sea of smiling faces and say that this shows that people are disappointed, for instance. I mean, it's kind of a simplistic kind of thing. But, that's all you can demand of the media. You can't tell them what stories to write. You can't tell them what opinions to have. You really try not to play favorites on saying, well, Rolling Stone wrote a bad piece, about General McChrystal, so we're not going to invite him into theater anymore. You really, you try not to do that. But you can demand of the media those things. And when they don't deliver, you hold them accountable. And we have on many, many occasions gotten back with various media outlets in print and other media and have told them their stories were wrong or they lacked those three C's, as we called them, and that we wanted a clarification. And in many cases, we got it.
This media outlet is out of time. Thanks for joining us today, U.S. Army Colonel retired Peter Mansour. Today on the show, we appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Ann.
That's all the time we have. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.